This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We took a loss on the chin last night. We will discuss that with Sean Spicer. Tyler O'Neill is here. We're going to talk about how everything you see is professional and paid for from the communists. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Good people, normal people, decent people, they have a hard time fully understanding scumbags, demons, and liars. They have a hard time comprehending that there are people out there who don't share their moral framework. I'm the same way. When I see a video of somebody abusing a dog, you read a story about someone hitting a woman, just something terrible, you think to yourself, that can't be human. That's not a human, right? Who would do something like that? But the truth is, there are so many people we share a planet with who don't share our moral values at all. And that brings me to the communists in the United States of America. Now, before we get to the latest on what dirty, filthy liars these people are, I want to rewind, all right? Because I'm sure you at least remember the headlines. In Charlottesville, Virginia, there was this big protest. Big protest. And it had a bunch of white supremacists there, of course. And maybe you remember Donald Trump coming out in the wake of all that. Someone died. It was a big ugly thing. Protests, counter-protests. And here's what Trump said.
I do think there's blame. Yes, I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
That's what he said. And then, of course, Democrats lied about that over and over and over and over and over again. It's a lie they will tell to this day. If you know a Democrat in your personal life, I bet you that Democrat will tell you to your face that Donald Trump called Nazis very fine people, even though we have video evidence, as I just played for you, of what he actually said. But once that lie got said in there, Donald Trump is a Nazi, and he called Nazis very fine people, well, that created an opportunity, you see. Joe Biden came out multiple times and said that's why he ran for president.
I ran for president in 2020. Because of what I saw in Charlottesville in August of 2017, extremists coming out of the woods, carrying torches, their veins bulging from their necks, carrying Nazi swastikas, and chanting the same exact anti-Semitic bile that was heard in Germany in the early 30s. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, so emboldened by a president then in the White House that they saw as an ally.
It's a lie. He knows it. But nevertheless, he was using what happened in Charlottesville to set a narrative. Dangerous white supremacists are on the move, and we have to fight a race war against them. Remember what he said to black people?
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
Okay. Pretty ugly stuff. And then he got installed as president after Democrats stole an election in 2020. Well, now, you see, it started with Charlottesville. Then they lied about Trump's comments. Then they stoked all these racial flames. And now that the narrative has been set, well, now it's time to act on that in an official way. And of course, they did.
According to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
You're going to hear words like Christian nationalism, like the new apostolic reformation. These are groups that you should get very schooled on, because they have a lot of power in Trump's circle. And the one thing that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different, is that they believe that our rights as Americans, as all human beings, don't come from any earthly authority. They don't come from Congress. They don't come from the Supreme Court. They come from God.
And they launched the government against you. But what was the whole angle? Well, you see, they had to come up with a justification to use the forces of government to arrest their political opponents, as communists have always done. But the whole point of this little talk is so we can bring up what happened today. I should say, what came out today. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche came out and said something, and I want you to remember the beginning of all of this. Joe Biden running for president, the Trump lie, the narrative about these dangerous white supremacists, all of it began with these Nazi groups at Charlottesville. So, Todd, where'd these Nazi groups come from?
One troubling example is that the SPLC was paying a member of the leadership group that planned the Unite the Right protest in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017 that resulted in the death of one person and injured dozens more. This particular person being paid by the SPLC allegedly received approximately $270,000 over the course of 8 years.
The SPLC is a communist front group. They're currently in a lot of legal trouble, as you see. The communist front group paid someone to pretend to be a Nazi and start a Nazi rally. And then Democrats, because they are communists, used the rally they paid for as justification to send the Department of Justice after you. Everything you see from Democrats is planned, professional, and paid for. None of it is organic. These people are soulless monsters. They will lie, cheat, steal. They will do whatever they have to do to take power, and they don't feel bad about it at all. So the next time you see a group of fat feminists in the street with stupid signs and dumb chants and everything, don't say to yourself, wow, are they bored? Look at it and say, someone paid for all that. Professional. Paid for. It's all an illusion. Everything you see. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We are going to talk to Tyler O'Neill. He is always a wealth of knowledge. We're going to talk to Sean Spicer. We have so much we have to get to tonight on the show. Before we get to those things, I want you to hire Americans. Or at least patronize companies who hire Americans. It must become a priority for all of us. It must. We cannot continue to hand this country over to foreigners. And when we hand money to companies who hire foreigners, well, we're depriving Americans of jobs. At Pure Talk, when you talk to someone at Pure Talk and you decide you're going to switch from Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile because you're tired of spending that much money, at Pure Talk, you will talk to an American. I don't have to guess. I don't have fingers crossed. Pure Talk hires Americans right here at home. You might actually even enjoy it. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
In the Middle District of Alabama, a grand jury returned an 11-count indictment charging the Southern Poverty Law Center with 6 counts of wire fraud, 4 counts of bank fraud, and 1 count of conspiracy to commit money laundering. According to the charges in the indictment, the SPLC is a nonprofit entity that purports to fight white supremacy and racial hatred by reporting on extremist groups and conducting research to inform law enforcement groups with the goal of dismantling these groups. As the indictment describes, the SPLC was not dismantling these groups. It was instead manufacturing the extremism it purports to oppose by paying sources to stoke racial hatred.
These SPLC guys don't sound like very good guys. We should probably talk to someone who knows a little something about this group. Tyler O'Neill joins me now. He's the author of the book. It kind of lays all this out. Making Hate Pay. And you'll be shocked to know the Southern Poverty Law Center is the central character in that tale. Tyler, what's up with this group? Who are these people?
Yeah, so these people, you know, their anodyne name suggests, they were founded to represent poor people in the South legally when they needed legal representation, or at least that's how they started. But then, you know, they started getting wealthy. They started realizing that the Ku Klux Klan was a paper tiger and that they could sue these Klan groups into bankruptcy very easily. So they would go to their donors and say, look, we're fighting hate, give us money. The Klan groups barely had a defense in court, so they folded. Lawyers actually said it was like shooting fish in a barrel. And the SPLC eventually ran out of grand dragons to slay. But they needed to continue to keep that high demand for hate. They needed to keep meeting it. So they had to find ways to artificially inflate the supply. So first, you know, they had these racist skinheads that they would report about and focus a lot of time on in the 1990s. And then starting in the early 2000s, they looked at conservative activists and said, you know what? They're the ones who should be on the hate map. So they started putting, you know, they started putting people who oppose illegal immigration, but notably not all legal immigration, on the hate map. And they said, you're an anti-immigrant hate group. They started putting people who warn about Islamic extremism on the hate map, saying, you're an anti-Muslim hate group. And then around 2010, they decided to put a whole bunch of conservative Christian nonprofits on the hate map, calling them anti-LGBTQ hate groups. And I mean, that's the label now. Back then, it was something quaint like anti-homophobic hate groups. But now, of course, the letters are going to continue growing, so the alphabet soup. And they decided, well, we're not actually going after Christians for what they believe. We're just going after people who vilify LGBT people. That was their claim. Anyway, a lot of these conservative Christians kind of took a problem with being put on a hate map with chapters of the KKK, and they said, look, SPLC, you're being anti-Christian. The SPLC says, oh, we're not anti-Christian, and they gave one piece of evidence for it, and that was that they didn't put Focus on the Family on the hate map. Lo and behold, 2025 rolls around, Focus on the Family's on the hate map. Now, this hate map, it's inspiring violence. If you actually look at it, you know, and this isn't just my words, this is the actual history. In 2012, you had a mass shooter target the Family Research Council, planning to shoot everyone in the building and smear a Chick-fil-A sandwich in their faces. And he told the FBI he targeted them because of the SPLC hate map. Then in 2017, you have a shooter open fire at a congressional baseball game practice, nearly taking the life of Steve Scalise, and lo and behold, he had liked the SPLC on Facebook. And then, of course, last year, just a couple months after the SPLC put Turning Point USA on the hate map, Tyler Robinson, who said he had enough of Charlie Kirk's hate, opened fire and took the life of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. And over again, you have this situation where the SPLC says, we condemn political violence, but they haven't taken Family Research Council or Turning Point USA off the hate map. Now, of course, the reason I started out with that explanation is we have this mismatch between the demand for hate that the SPLC donors expect to see and the supply of hate, how actually hateful the United States is. Well, if it turns out, if the supply is so much lower than the demand, the SPLC is going to artificially inflate the supply. And lo and behold, what we learned from this indictment yesterday is that the SPLC was pouring millions of dollars into supporting white nationalists, Klan members, Aryan nations, these sorts of people. And the kicker is, some of the same people who they were funding were on their list of extremists. So in other words, the SPLC is going out there saying to their donors, we're fighting hate. And meanwhile, they're padding the hate numbers, not just by smearing conservatives, but also by putting people who are on SPLC payroll, clandestine payroll, by the way. That's where the charges come in. But this, you know, you cannot make up a more embarrassing story for the SPLC than this one.
Tyler, can you tell me, how much trouble are they in, clandestines, you know, payroll and all that? Are we talking about people who are going to prison for the rest of their lives and they're closing the doors of the building? Are we talking about some lackey getting a slap on the wrist? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. So ultimately, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't really know. I also don't know what all the evidence behind the charges is. So according to the indictment, which seems pretty strong to me, you have the SPLC setting up these shell companies and then taking money and funneling it through the shell companies to these white nationalist actors. And the SPLC claims that these were informants. According to the indictment, these people weren't doing the work of informants. If you actually look at it, the indictment says the SPLC was directing them to post racist messages online. It directed one guy who helped organize the Charlottesville white nationalist gathering to get more people to Charlottesville in, you know, what is clearly a psyop if I had ever seen one, if this allegation is correct. But, you know, these activities that these people were engaged in while the SPLC was paying them suggests, and the plain text of the indictment also suggests, these weren't informants. You know, the SPLC said, oh, we're just paying informants because we've faced violent threats. And we need to know if these violent groups are going to be targeting us for violence. We need to be tipped off so that we can prevent violence. That might be an acceptable explanation for this if we were talking in the 1980s when the SPLC's offices were actually firebombed. Instead, we're talking 2014 to 2023. So there haven't been any real threats of violence, at least to my knowledge, against the SPLC in that time. And the SPLC has a lot of defense on their building anyway. So the idea that this represented a real threat for which they needed informants is off the pale. But regardless, what we see here is a situation where the SPLC's criminal engagement, allegedly, is funneling this money and lying to cover it up. And even if they don't get, even if this doesn't result in guilty verdicts, which I think, you know, it likely will. The Middle District of Alabama is not exactly known for favoring leftist causes. So the jury pool might be, inclined to distrust the SPLC anyway. But even if there is an acquittal here, it is still a massive scandal that the SPLC was funding these people.
Tyler, real quick, I've only got a couple minutes left. Who funds the SPLC? Whose money is this?
Yeah, so the SPLC is independently wealthy. They do receive money from the left's dark money network. Most notably, the Tides Foundation has sent millions of dollars their way. Soros' hands are not particularly close on the SPLC. The Open Society Foundation's did give a small grant to them a few years back. Of course, we don't know the basic nature of the Tides Foundation is we don't know who the donor behind that grant to the SPLC was. It very much could have been Soros, it could have been somebody else. But regardless, the big thing about the SPLC is they were founded by a guy who got ousted for racial discrimination and sexual harassment claims. That's a whole nother can of worms. But that guy was a consummate fundraiser. And he took the list of donors from the George McGovern and Jimmy Carter campaigns and use that to create the SPLC's donor network. So the SPLC's donor network is real. And there, I get these Google News alerts when someone dies and they say, in lieu of flowers, give to the SPLC. And that always hits me, because I think it is an utter travesty that people are dedicating their last memory to them to such an egregious, corrupt organization.
What dirt balls. Tyler, thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man. All right. So I'm going to prepare you for something. Sean Spicer is going to join us in a moment. We took it on the chin last night. We took a bad election loss in Virginia. And, you know, what do we always say? Every race has its own story. We like to study national trends, and that's fine. We're always going to do that. But every single race of some kind has its own story to tell. You woke up today, and Democrats gained more seats in the House of Representatives because of what happened in Virginia, and I want to know why. We'll talk to Sean Spicer about that in a moment. Before we talk to him about that, I want to talk to you about your energy. I want to talk to you about how you feel when you get home from work or home from school, when it's 4 or 5 o'clock. Are you done? Just out of gas? Have you just accepted that's kind of, well, I'm old? No, look, you're full of estrogen. That's the problem. It's not your fault. Synthetic estrogens are in our water supply now. It's friggin' terrible. It's from all the birth control stuff. Chalk can change it. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk can reverse that lethargic feeling you have at the end of the day. You are going to be full of pep. Your mood is going to be so much better. Start now. You're 60, 90 days away from being a different person. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, we lost last night in Virginia. It's going to matter for the entire country. What happened and why did it happen? Let's ask Sean about it. Joining me now, host of the Sean Spicer Show, and of course, author of the book Trump 2.0, and that rhymes. I don't know if he did that on purpose. All right, Sean, what happened in Virginia last night? Why did it happen? Why is it important? Yes, we see the book, Sean. We understand the book. It is a very good book, but we see the book. All right, now tell me about Virginia.
Well, we lost, but there's a difference. We lost and we didn't have to lose. It was an unbelievable, huge power grab. And that's the bottom line. This was a power grab. Virginia was represented 6-5 by the Democrats. So it was already fair. And we went from being fair to the most unfair gerrymandered state. But what upsets me about this is honestly the idea that we could have stopped it. I've seen the former governor go out right now and do a bunch of interviews on another network claiming, wow, we worked really hard. I'm sorry. 5 last minute interviews on a network is not working hard. That's not a strategy. Doing a teletown hall 24 hours out is not a strategy. We got outspent massively and had hundreds, literally hundreds of millions of dollars. It would have been the cheapest political date ever. And these 4 seats could easily, we have a 1-seat majority in the House, they easily could have been the difference. But to your fundamental question, Jesse, why? It's because the money that was available got scooped up by the same losing consultants from last November who put all the money on cable ads so that they could get a take on this. The grassroots, I was there on Sunday, Steve Bannon and I drove down to Hanover, Virginia, spent hours with the grassroots, trying to mobilize them. People were waving their hands, screaming, can you help us with some tech, some money, get out the vote effort, door knocking, etc. If you look at the results today, we did very well holding our own in Southern Virginia. Fairfax County, we got crushed. They didn't even try up here. And again, my dad used to say to me, I don't care if you win all the time, but at least go out there and try. Republicans didn't even try. A bunch of consultants made some money. And if we have any hope of keeping the majority in November, people have to remember that this is not going to be, you can't just sit back, put a bunch of TV money up the last few weeks and hope that that's a strategy.
Okay, let's drill down on some details here because that matters a lot. We were massively outspent.
Yeah.
Who did the spending? Who didn't do the spending? Where's the Democrat money coming from? Where should our money have come from? Who wasn't writing checks?
Yeah, so it's a good question on a lot of fronts. So first of all, the Democrats probably, when it's all said and done, spent about $75 million. The Republican side, probably between 15 and 20. But what I think gets obscured, even though that's obscene, the Democratic money largely came from outside of Virginia. And there's a lot of whining on our side, which I get it. The question wasn't fair. But you know what? We didn't play the game well either. So let's stop whining about how they played the game. They out-hustled us and start realizing that we've got to start playing the same game, right? So they went out there, did that. What happened with the limited money that came into Virginia is a bunch of the same, as I mentioned, consultants that lost epically in November of last year did the same tried and true failed strategy, which was to dump a ton of money into cable news that nobody's watching and completely neglected the grassroots. But here's the key that you have to understand. When you make a cable buy, consultants get between 10 and 20% of the buy as a kickback, right? So there's an incentive if you're a consultant that's vacuuming them up the money from the grassroots, people who are donating it, to put it all on TV because you're going to get a kickback in the form of you know, a percentage of the buy. And they don't get that when they put it in door knocking. They don't get that when they put it in mail. They don't get that when they do it on digital. And so there's not an incentive. So the reality is that Republicans need to look in the mirror and say, are we going to keep doing the same failed strategy over and over again, which is raise money to give to a bunch of consultants who do nothing? Or are we willing to go where the people are? There was a study out this week. 70% of Republican voters do not get their news politically from traditional media outlets. And yet, where are all these people putting the money? On traditional outlets. And learn. So wake up, learn the lesson. Donald Trump did it in 2024. He went on podcasts, independent media outlets, and won, and brought a new coalition to bear. And I just, to me, again, this is one of those games, if you will, politically speaking, that we look at and say, this was easily winnable by another $3 or $4 million. 81,000 votes.
Okay, so let me ask the question this way, Shang. You keep bringing up these high-priced political consultants, and of course you're correct about that. But let's say I'm a high-priced, scummy political consultant. We'll say my name is Chris. Now, I'm Chris. I'm going to blow a whole bunch of your money. If you give me a whole bunch of your money and I don't bring you results once, okay, no big deal. That's not your fault. But then if you come back to me, scummy Chris, again and again and again, this is slowly becoming your fault instead of my fault. So who in the GOP is responsible for handing scummy guy money time and time again?
Well, so here's how this plays out. So last night we lost by 81,000 votes. And so I turn around to you next cycle and say, hey, you know, I ran that effort last time and I came within 81,000 votes. If we just raise a little bit more money, we can put it over the finish line this time. So I'm just telling you, the way it works is that each time you say, you know what, we were just a little short, but I'm the guy with experience, by the way. I've run statewide multiple times now. It's just we're coming up a little short on the cash. So if you give us a little bit more this time than last time, I think I can get you over the finish line this time. And that's how it works. They keep selling the same people. It is unbelievable, but you go out and you sell your experience and say, you know, we came up a little shy. I was probably $3-4 million short this time. If we could raise that money, I'll get you over the top. And by the way, all of these people, go look. And with all due respect to our former governor here, he's taken a quote-unquote victory lap today saying, we worked really hard. No, you didn't. Touch. 5-6 interviews at the end is not. So they're all out there trying to claim credit for what the grassroots did and spent their, I mean, I just, it is unbelievable, but you get, it's snake oil salesman stuff.
Okay, do we have, and I'm gonna ask the lamest question because when you're down to this, it's just pathetic, but can the Supreme Court help us?
No. Well, yes, it can. But the Virginia Supreme Court needs to be reappointed by the Democratic legislature. Okay, so what do you, I mean, they had a chance, just so everyone understands. The Supreme Court had a chance, and this is in blatant violation of Virginia's Constitution, by the way, which says that districts have to be compact. They're not. Clearly, this is the most, the Southern Virginia will be represented by 5 districts that emanate from Fairfax County, which is a liberal bastion in the north part of Virginia, to dilute the Republican vote. This is so blatantly, you don't have to have watched more than one episode of Law and Order to realize how unconstitutional what just happened was. But the justices are a bunch of wusses, and they're thinking, and here's the kicker, mark my word on this, these wusses think that they will get reappointed, the conservative quote-unquote justices, or rather the ones that were appointed by Republicans, by trying to demonstrate to the Democrats who control the legislature that, see, we'll play ball with you. Trust me when I tell you this. They are going to fail to do their duty to uphold the law, and then the Democrats are going to throw them aside as soon as they don't need them anymore. I cannot believe this is going to happen. So in theory, the court could save us, but they made the state go through this referendum for no reason, if that was the case. So they chose to punt and say, we're going to let the referendum happen, knowing it was unconstitutional, and then we'll rule after.
Good God. All right, Sean, let's switch things up here to a different depressing topic. Donald Trump is in the White House because of the economy and the border. Everybody knows it's not your pet issue or my pet issue. That's why Donald Trump's in the White House. People couldn't afford things. They didn't want a bunch of scumbag foreigners in their community, and they elected Donald Trump to do things about it. Good, good, good. Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, I hope, is not debuting the new GOP talking point heading into the midterms. Here he was.
Look, this is the time to stand behind our president, behind our military. Could you imagine Iran with a nuclear weapon? If Iran had a nuclear weapon, gasoline would be $10 a gallon.
Okay, so Sean, just to clarify, Democrats are going, they're going to lie, of course. They're running already on affordability. You can't afford things. Things are too expensive. And the GOP cell is going to be, well, it'd be worse if Iran had nuclear weapons. Is that what we're going with?
Well, even worse than that, I think our agenda, here's what kills me. So from what I understand, a lot of Republicans are going to say they'd be worse. Like, we suck less.
Oh, gosh.
And that's now here's why it upsets me. I've been in the game for 30 years on running campaigns and involved. And when you have all of the accomplishments, you mentioned the border, it's a big one, but then you look at the economy, no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, Trump accounts, there's a lot, the MAHA movement alone, we have things that we can point to as accomplishments and say that we're making the country better, we're making it healthier, we're making it prosperous, we're making it safer, and yet Republicans can't go out there and articulate that. My best example was the other day on tax day. Here we are, having passed all of these great aspects of the big beautiful bill that make people more economically viable, put more money in their pocket. And did you see a single thing outside of that DoorDash stunt that the White House did? Not one. And I was up on Capitol Hill yesterday. I talked to about 15 members of Congress. And I said, let me just ask you bluntly, do you think you guys are effectively selling the legislation that you passed and how it affects people's lives? And the answer I got to a person was, we could be doing better. Like, I have never seen anything like this. They're not going out there. They're not even, I mean, they literally aren't even trying.
Sean, I'm going to ask you something. And I know that you're going to have to be careful how you answer this, although you always give it to us straight. But I'm really going to ask you something here. Donald Trump himself, because you know the man and I do not. Do you think there is part of Donald Trump who has just kind of basically shrugged his shoulders at the fact that we're going to get creamed in the midterms? That I don't want to say checked out, because I'm not trying to insult the man. But do you think there's some aspect to that?
No. And here's why. Okay. If you saw Trump 1.0, he recognizes the vast difference. Nobody wants to be impeached and investigated ad nauseum. Yeah. And it was not an easy thing, right? To wake up every day and to get another subpoena, to recognize that you're spending all of your time responding to that stuff, hiring lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. No one wants that. That's like saying, you know, do you mind a proctological exam every day? And the answer is no. So they've seen it. They've seen the movie. They know what's going to happen. And for those reasons, every time I've talked to them, they get it. And now, how that manifests itself in terms of tactics and strategy is a good question. But I can tell you from my conversations, they recognize you lose the House and you go from implementing the America First agenda to being on defense every single day. And here's the one thing that is important for people to understand. It's one thing to have ended Trump 1.0 in the doing investigation, because frankly, let's be honest, no one saw it coming. No one knew better, if you will. No one had seen anything like this. You've now seen the movie once. You know how this can end. Do you really want to spend the last 2 years that you are eligible to be president on defense getting investigated every single day? And as you brought up earlier, I wrote a book about this. There's a whole reason I called it Trump 2.0. It comes to an end if we lose this midterm. It literally, everything that we learned, everything going forward, means that everybody will get investigated and impeached over and over and over again. We cannot allow that to happen.
Sean, thank you, my brother. Trump 2.0 is his book. I would highly recommend you go get it. Thanks, man. I'm going to need some Beam tonight. I'm going to need some dream powder from Beam to sleep, because every time I talk to some smart political person like Sean, I get worse answers. It's not that the answers are bad, but the news is bad. What are we doing? How do we blow that in Virginia? How are we messaging like this? That's why you need dream powder from Beam. That's why you need a cup of hot chocolate before bed. It's got natural things in it. You sip on your little hot chocolate and you sleep like a little baby. Drug-free. It's delicious. If I didn't tell you things were in it, you'd never know things were in it. It's just cinnamon, hot chocolate. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Well, it's almost like the GOP is trying to disenfranchise voters before the midterms. We want some things out of Congress. It's not just all on the president. We need some things done. That majority we have looks like it might be in jeopardy. Things like the SAVE Act. So let me read you a little quote here. If we don't have other pressing stuff in front of us, then we'll see about getting that going. That was Senate Majority Leader John Thune when talking about little things like having to show ID to vote. Joining me now, the great Chip Roy, hopefully about to be Texas's Attorney General. Okay, Chip, this is sounding worse and worse by the day.
Well, situation normal in Washington, Jesse. Great to be on with you. And what we're dealing with is the continuation of the Senate hiding behind this fake 60-vote threshold. Now, everybody knows that. I don't need to repeat it. But what we've got here is the majority leader is refusing to acknowledge that it is critical that Republicans deliver for the American people. That's the problem right now. And here's what I would say. We should change the rules if we need to. I think Mike Lee is correct that all we really need to do is enforce the rules. Make sure that senators, you know, get up out of their lazy boys, go down to the floor of the Senate and work and debate and do what we need to do. But let's take this to a higher level. This gets to the will of Republicans to match or exceed the intensity of Democrats in opposing everything that we do. You saw what just happened in Virginia. We're sitting around fiddling while Rome burns. Democrats just said, oh, you added a few seats in Texas? We're going to turn Virginia 10-1 Democrat. Like, we're saying, oh, we're not going to touch the filibuster. What do you think Democrats are going to do when they retake the House and the Senate at some point in the future? What do you think they'll do? Of course they'll nuke the filibuster to pack the court or to make D.C. a state. So if we don't act now and then excite people to give us the majority, then you're just handing the keys over to the crazy radicals that are like the Southern Poverty Law Center that were just indicted, that are like the Islamists that are coming into our country to destroy it, that are like the radical Democrats and Marxists in Virginia that just said that five people in Arlington and Alexandria, which is basically the Communist Republic of the extension of DC, are going to represent the entirety of the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's insane.
Chip. And this is obviously doesn't apply to every GOP member of the House or Senate, because there are some really solid people there. But do you think there are elements within, let's say, the GOP House who kind of want to lose the midterms?
I can't speculate to that. I do know there's a lot of people here. The overwhelming number of people here are wanting to do the right thing. I mean, let's be clear that what the Republican House majority that we've delivered, it's taken an extensive amount of work the last 16 months. We delivered on Laken Riley, the SUE Act to allow states like Texas to be able to sue the federal government if they ever leave our border open again. The Big Beautiful Bill with tax cuts. We fought personally, I did, to get the Green New Scam subsidies repealed. We've got another large amounts of legislation that we passed out of the House. But it keeps hitting this wall in the Senate. And I think, I don't know whether the people want us to lose. I think there's a block here who think that things are just like they've always been. And you just have to understand, Chip, just be patient. These things take time. And what I'm saying is we're losing our country. We have 330 mosques in Texas. We have Epic City. We have 5 million people from Islamic countries, Muslim countries, admitted into the United States since 9/11. What kind of a country that wants to keep its sovereignty and to keep its culture and to keep its soul and the rule of law invites people into your country in overwhelming numbers to destroy it, which is the stated objective of the Islamist, like the Marxist around the world. This is why I introduced the Mamdani Act this week. Why are we not stopping and vetting these people from coming in and then denaturalizing and removing them? It's because we're not acknowledging that there's a war being waged against us. You can't win a war if you don't acknowledge it exists. Jesse, you wore the uniform. You served our country. In what universe could the military go be said, all right, go win the war? You know, if you don't acknowledge there's a war, you can't win it. We got people who have declared war against us, and we're just sitting back and talking about Senate rules and talking about how, well, like, let me today, I had someone on the floor come up to me today. We have a bill that would say that only citizens should be counted in the census. You agree with that? I agree with that. Everybody watching this show agrees with that. One of them came up and said, well, but what about the green card holders? We should count them in the Senate too, in the census too. I was like, what are you doing? You're arguing over green card holders versus citizens? Let's just make it to where only citizens are counted. Let's go on offense. But this is what we're dealing with up here with a handful of folks.
Chip, tell me the Dignidad Act is dead.
I mean, yes, it's dead because a lot of us will throw our bodies in front of the train. I think the speaker recognizes that this is has no direction. Look, I will tell you, though, that we had 10 Republicans who joined with a handful of Democrats, with the entirety of the Democrats last week, to continue this TSP program for Haitians, right? This temporary protected status, TPS, sorry. And 10 Republicans joined with them to extend it. This week after, a woman, a mother, was bludgeoned to death with a hammer outside of a convenience store in Florida by a Haitian who had one of these temporary protected status. By the way, that's temporary in the back of a hurricane from 2010. Look, the fact here is the Dignity Act is garbage. It's amnesty. Most people know it. The vast majority of Republicans at our conference oppose it. But you have 19 or 20 co-sponsors. And look, if they want to team up with Democrats, they could try to move it and advance it off the floor. I hope we won't do that. And look, I don't want to be, I'm not black-pilled. I still think Republicans will win this fall, but we need to deliver. We need to fund DHS. We need to get the SAVE Act accomplished. We need to, you know, do some things like make sure FISA protections protect American citizens. We need to deliver on a couple of other things and some tax relief for families, something maybe health savings accounts, whatever. Let's deliver on a few things and then let's go march and go win in the fall. But, you know, right now you got too many Republicans that are twiddling their thumbs.
All right, Tag, before we go, what's the status of your AG race in Texas? Runoffs or bribery? How does all this work?
Well, we're in a runoff. I'm running May 26th is the election. May 18th is the early voting. And look, I'm here in the state, in the Capitol, so I can't get too much into election and talking about my campaign that way. But I'll tell you this, I'm running for Attorney General. The reason I'm leaving Congress, I'm leaving the Capitol, is because I know the assault that's being waged against Texas. The Islamists on the march that are trying to Islamify Texas. The Marxists who are putting criminals on our streets that are on, you know, putting these judges and DAs letting criminals out, the wide open borders that only the president currently has stopped, but we've not got anything codified. You need an attorney general who's been in a courtroom, who's been a lawyer, who's practiced law, who's done the job, and I'm that candidate. And the fact is, people know that. We're going around the state of Texas and getting our message far and wide. I'd ask people to take a close look at both candidates. I don't think it's a close call. We feel very good, but the election's going to be close. So I'll leave it at that because I'm on official property. But we need to make sure, as a broad point, that we deliver a message to America that we're going to have conservatives and we're going to fight and we're going to save Texas and save America. And that's why I'm running.
Go get them, Chip. Appreciate it. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. Aren't you tired of all the weirdo freaks? All the stupid flags and everybody gets a special day and a special week. So here it is, and I'm not making this up, I want to read it. It's Lesbian Visibility Week, apparently. Houston, they have a city councilwoman named Alejandra Salinas, and that's her standing up there with what apparently is a lesbian flag. I can't believe there's not a softball in it. It's a lesbian flag to celebrate Lesbian Visibility Week. I'm so tired of these freaks. But anyway, look, out of respect for the week, we have to salute one, don't we?
Hey, Lindsay, why don't you just admit that you're gay and then people won't blackmail you anymore?
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.